Hare Krishna. Welcome to the Mahabharat character series. Today we will start with discussing the next generation characters. So we will discuss Bhishma and Drona from the oldest generation. Then in the next generation we will discuss Dhritarashtra, we will discuss Vidura, and we will discuss Kunti. Of course, these three were half brothers, with Dhritarashtra, Vidura and Pandu. But Pandu doesn't have much role because he passes away quite early. So we will discuss Kunti, and while discussing about Kunti, we will also discuss about Pandu. And of course, we will discuss about Pandu at other times also when we are discussing about Dhritarashtra and Vidura. So Dhritarashtra is the son of Vichitravirya. So going back to the hierarchy, you know that Maharaj Shantanu had one son, Bhishma, who chose. Shantanu is here, he has Bhishma who chose not to marry. So then he had other sons. So his sons were Chitrangada, who died before marrying, Vichitravirya, who married to Ambika and Ambalika, but he died before begetting any progeny. And so now through Vichitravirya, who had two wives, Ambika and Ambalika, they united with Vyasa at the order of Shantanu's wife, it is their mother-in-law, Satyavati. So now the union of Ambika with Vyasadeva produced Dhritarashtra, and of Ambalika with Vyasadeva produced Vidura, produced Pandu, sorry. And then through a maid servant, the union produced Vidura. So now Dhritarashtra, he is the son of Ambika. And when Vyasadeva came to unite with Ambika, Ambika was expecting Bhishma because she thought that's her brother-in-law. And when she saw Vyasadeva, she was mortified because Vyasadeva was a sage who was returning from the forest after conducting a lot of austerities. And so he was in a disheveled state and he was not physically attractive. And because of the revulsion she felt, she closed her eyes. And because she closed her eyes at the time of union, so it is said that that's how Dhritarashtra was born blind. Now we may wonder, how does this happen? So of course, just the mother doing a particular thing alone is not the cause, but that is a significant factor at the material level. Now there is an emergent field in science called as prenatal impressions. That means the way the mother behaves or what all the mother does when she is expecting and she is carrying the child, that has a tremendous effect on the child itself. So the prenatal impressions can act in various ways. So for example, if the mother sees there have been scientifically documented studies like this, that there are many children who are born with birthmarks and birth defects. Now, birthmarks and birth defects, what causes them, it's very difficult to say. Generally, one of the major causes have to be genetic. But when the genetic causes are there, at that time, the parents or the grandparents, they should also have that defect, and that's how it will come to the next generation, to the child, infant who is born now. But if there is no genetic cause, then what is the cause of the birth effect or birth defect or birthmark? So one could be the prenatal impressions. And there have been several documented studies which show that, say, if the mother, when she was carrying a child, if she sees some very ghastly sight, if she sees as at a site of arson, where there is big blazing fire, and that scene gets burnt in her mind. Oh, how brutal, how deadly the fire is. And that impression gets burned in the mind. And then when the child is born, sometimes the child is born with a burn scar. That becomes a birthmark right from the birth itself. So there have been documented cases like this of prenatal impressions. Prenatal means before birth in the womb. The impressions that go from the mother's psyche to the child's body. So it was not, so at a literal level, the closing of the eyes of the mother doesn't have anything to do with the eyes of the child, but the impressions are conveyed. And how the impressions are conveyed, that is a whole subtle field which science, as we know it, is only beginning to recognize. So that way, both the sisters, Ambika and Ambalika, their reactions on seeing Vyasadev had effects. So their reaction on seeing Vyasadev, she closed her eyes, and that's why Dhritarashtra was born blind. That was for Ambika, and for Ambalika, she turned pale. She knew what to expect, and that's why she didn't close her eyes. She had she was a younger sister, and Vyasadeva had already told Satyavati that because Ambika closed her eyes, the child will be born blind. And Ambalika did not want that fate for her child. So she did not close her eyes, but still she turned pale. And that's why that also had an effect. That effect was that the child was born pale complexion, and that's why he was known as Pandu. So these are prenatal impressions which have effects. Now we will see a significant characteristic of Dhritarashtra, which is also signified through his name. Now Dhritarashtra, Rashtra is country, Dhrita is hold on to. So Dhritarashtra can have a positive connotation and a negative connotation. At a positive connotation, Dhritarashtra can mean that one who maintains the kingdom, Dhrita, Dharyate, one who maintains the kingdom. In a negative sense, it can mean that one who is very attached to the kingdom, one who doesn't want to leave the kingdom. So in many of the characters, they have names which are symbolic of their activities in future. So how does this work out? Actually, often the names are given with a positive intention, but the names also have a negative connotation, which may not be implied when the birth takes place and the name and the name giving ceremony is conducted, but those characters act in that particular way. So how does this work out? So we understand that ultimately whatever happens in the pastimes of the Lord is orchestrated by the Lord. So the Lord orchestrates the characters who are involved so that they get names, or they are given names appropriate to their actions. And some people say that this indicates that this whole Mahabharata is mythological and everything is symbolic. But no, you have to understand that there are other factors involved, and those factors involved are that there is a higher orchestration by a higher force in this case. So it's not mythological, it's literal, although there are some symbolic explanations of it also. Now moving forward, Dhritarashtra, when he was born, Vyasadeva told that because he's born of a Kshatriya family, so he had Kshatriya strength, Kshatriya valor. So he had the strength of 10,000 elephants, and he was so powerful, it is said that with just one hand, he could crush stones. He had such power. Although he had power, as he grew up, and in the Vedic culture, as well as in other cultures in the past, the principle of primogeniture was followed. Primogeniture means that primo is earlier or first, geniture is taking birth, who is born. So primogeniture means the first child that is born, the first son, will become the successor. That means in lineage of kings, the eldest son of the king will become the next king. So by the principle of primogeniture, Dhritarashtra was supposed to be the king. And Dhritarashtra trained himself as a Kshatriya to the best of his capacity. In terms of prowess, he had power. But in terms of eyes, he did not. And the courtiers and the soldiers and the generals, they were apprehensive about the idea of a blind king leading an army. If there has to be a fight, how can a blind king lead the army? Even if that blind king somehow compensates for the lack of vision with other skills, still it's difficult. So that blind people can do many things, and to the extent they do things, that is laudable. But there are certain things, especially the vital responsibility of ruling a king and leading a war, these are activities which cannot be entrusted to a person without eyes. At an individual level, a person may be inspired and may be able to do wonderful things. But the citizens, the courtiers, they felt that having a blind person as the king would be detrimental to the state interests. And Dhritarashtra had half-brothers. They are called half-brothers because, in one sense, they were not born from the same mother. They are born, they're sisters. But then, they are not cousins because they had the same father. The father, in the sense of the instrument, was Vasudeva. But in the actual sense, in the sense of lineage, the father is considered to be Vichitravirya. Although Vichitravirya had passed away, they are not considered to be the descendants of Vyasa. They are considered to be the descendants in the Kuru dynasty itself. So Pandu was younger, and Pandu was very respectful to Dhritarashtra. And he expected Dhritarashtra will become the king. But then they had a third brother, Vidura. Vidura was very wise. And Vidura recognized the danger and how the enemies would exploit the weakness that would be created by the presence of a blind king. And when he pointed it out, Dhritarashtra saw the point. So the idea of a blind person becoming the king was like an elephant in the room. The elephant in the room metaphor is used when there is something which is so big and very dangerous. Suppose we are sitting and having a discussion in the room, and there is a giant elephant which also comes and sits at a particular corner. Everybody in the room will be apprehensive. What will that elephant do? Will it come and knock me? So that topic is there on everyone's mind, but suppose nobody talks about it. So that is the idea of the metaphor elephant in the room. That means subject that everyone is thinking about, but nobody is talking about. So Vidura brought out this reference to this elephant in the room. That elephant in the room was the idea of a blind king, blind person becoming the king. So when Dhritarashtra recognized the validity of the point, and he abdicated his right to becoming the successor, becoming the next king. And then Pandu, although initially he was reluctant to become the king, he agreed, recognizing that it was the need of duty. Now Vidura, he had been not born of the queens, he had born of a maidservant. So he never had any right to the kingdom. And Vidura accepted this. So now in the Mahabharata, we will see the contrast between characters. And this contrast we can see between Vidura and Dhritarashtra. So both of them were handed out, in one sense you could say, bad cards by destiny. Suppose people are playing a game of cards and some people get a bad set of cards. Then what can we do? We have to play the best game that we can with those cards. So Vidura as well as Dhritarashtra got a bad set of cards. Vidura, because he was born from a maidservant, so he never had a right to the kingdom, although he was almost like in the kingdom itself. He was treated like a brother or a half-brother, but he had no right to the kingdom. Dhritarashtra, he was born from the queen, but he was blind. So now, when we are given a certain set of cards, certain things which can't be changed, then it's best to accept that and move forward in life. If we keep hankering and lamenting for that which cannot be done, then we unnecessarily create dissatisfaction, dissension, and eventual destruction. And that is what happens with respect to Dhritarashtra. Dissatisfaction. Oh, why could I not be the king? Why? We don't see Vidura lamenting like this. Vidura accepts his lot and he becomes a very competent, principle-centered and trustworthy minister. And he plays his role well. So Dhritarashtra, unfortunately, is not able to accept this. And he keeps trying, scheming, and somehow trying to outdo the cards that he has been given and try to get the kingdom somehow or the other. So at this particular point, he abdicates the right to the kingdom. But still that craving is there. And that's what causes him to fan the ambition and often the evil schemes of Dhritarashtra, of his son Duryodhana. So Pandu becomes the king, and in this generation, when the marriage is supposed to take place, so Bhishma, because the father, Vichitravirya, has already passed away. So in the absence of the father, their uncle, so in one sense, in this sense, not a direct uncle, like a cousin uncle, Bhishma is the cousin uncle for Dhritarashtra. So he decides to arrange for the marriages of everyone. And he arranges for Gandhari, who is the daughter of the king of Kandahar or Gandhar, which is in modern day Afghanistan. So Hastinapur was Delhi more or less. And he gets the daughter of the king Suvala. Now Suvala has also a son, Shakuni, and a daughter, Gandhari. So now Gandhari comes along and she is handed over to Dhritarashtra. Now, Gandhari is a chaste and powerful lady. In fact, it is her chastity that is the secret of her potency, her immense power. And we will see later on how her power is so great that she blesses Duryodhana and she even curses Krishna. And Krishna accepts her curse. But here, we see again the contrast in the approach of Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. Now Gandhari could have ranted at her destiny and she would have had a lot more right to rant. He says she was born healthy, she had eyes, and why was she handed to, as a wife, to a person who had no eyes? But rather than protesting, he said, okay, this is what is what I've been handed to me, I'll accept it, and I'll accept it gracefully. So what did she do? She not only accepted a husband, a person who had no eyes, but she chose to become like him. So she chose to cover her eyes with blindfold so that she would also be at the same level as her husband. Nowadays, today people talk about empathy. So sympathy means if somebody else is having some distress, we feel, we feel emotions, concern for that person. So that is sympathy. That means say somebody is a beggar and is starving. And then if a person is heartless, okay, you're starving, starve. That is heartlessness. Sympathy means, this person is suffering so much, let me do something for him. So sympathy is good. It is definitely better than heartlessness. But generally sympathy is often offered from a stage of superiority. Yes. That, yes, this person is suffering. Let me be kind. Let me be compassionate. And let me help that person be relieved of suffering. Or let me mitigate or console the person. So sympathy is offered from a superior position. But empathy means we go down to the level of that person. And try to feel as that person is feeling. So Gandhari demonstrated such empathy. And she accepted whatever fate had handed over to her. And she accepted it gracefully, willingly. And she wanted to be empathetic to her husband. So her husband had to live in darkness without seeing the world. She said, I will also live like that. And that's how she lived throughout her life. There's only one time she opened her eyes. And that we will discuss that when we talk about Duryodhana. That was to bless Duryodhana. But she also did like that. So, it was the great fortune of Dhritarashtra that he got as chaste and as devoted a wife as Gandhari. Marriage is such a critical decision. And the kind of spouse one gets, it shapes one's entire life. So, Dhritarashtra, he was blind and it was certainly, we could say at one level, unfortunate. But then, he also got things which were good in his life. But he did not take the good. We will see that Gandhari several times gave him good advice. But still, he neglected her advice. So now, Dhritarashtra was married to Gandhari. Pandu was married to Kunti and Madri. And then, Dhritarashtra united with Gandhari. And Dhritarashtra still had the hope that, okay, if I don't become the king, at least my son will become the king. And so, when Dhritarashtra and Gandhari united, somehow Gandhari's pregnancy went on for a long, long, long time. So Gandhari had earlier been blessed by Lord Shiva that she would have 100 sons. So nowadays, if somebody is blessed, will have 100 sons. People will think it's not a blessing, it's a curse. My God, 100 sons, how will we maintain them? Financially, emotionally, practically, taking care of 100 sons would be seem like a frightening experience, a frightening prospect. But in those days, people recognized that children are the gift of God. And so 100 sons was considered to be a great blessing for her. And Lord Shiva gave it and she accepted this blessing jubilantly. And she was waiting, and actually Vyasadeva also blessed her. So Gandhari was in her own way virtuous, and when she was presented to Vyasadeva after her marriage, Vyasadeva was there. So then Vyasadeva blessed her that you will have 100 sons. And as she was waiting for her pregnancy, so Pandu, he lived as a king for some time, but Pandu had a mind which was more inclined towards renunciation. So he had gone to the forests, and when he was in the forest, at that time the news came that Kunti had begotten her first child, Yudhishthir. So when the news of Kunti already having begotten children came up, so Gandhari became frustrated, because at least the hope was that her son would become the next king, but now Kunti had already begotten a child, that means her son would not become the king. So she, in great frustration, she hit her womb. Why is this child not coming out? Why is that delivery not happening? And as she hit the womb, by that pressure, a lump of flesh came out. And that lump of flesh was practically not living. And she was horrified. And she prayed to Vyasadeva. She called him, and Vyasadeva appeared over there. Sages have mystical powers by which they can connect at the level of the mind. And so Vyasadeva came over there and she said, "Oh sage, you had promised me that I would have 100 sons, but I have just got this lump of flesh. What will happen to me? How will your word come true? Is it that your word been falsified?" So Vyasadeva said, "No, my word has not been falsified." He said, "You take this lump of flesh, cut it into 100 pieces, and place it in a proper environment, nutritional environment, oils and other things around it. Place it in a proper pot and it will grow." So along with this, Vyasadeva also told her that, you would also have desired to have a daughter. So I bless you that you will also have a daughter. And that daughter was named as Dushyala. So now these 100 sons, they lived in, that lump of flesh which had come out, it was divided into 100 parts. And it stayed in an environment, conducive to an environment, which was similar to a womb. And from there, the child was born. The 100 children were born. And these 100 children became the 100 Kauravas. Now we may wonder, how does this possible? So actually, we have something like test tube babies now. So this is just another version of a technology that we are not familiar with. But the technology which we have is not unheard of before. Many of these features of technology were known in the past, and they were used whenever required. So Vyasadeva is a sage, and sages have powers which come from their devotion to God and their asceticism. So by those ascetic powers, they can do things which ordinary people can't do. So he created something which is similar to what is created by modern technology, a suitable environment like a womb for the growth and for the birth of the embryo into a child. So in this way, the 100 children were born. Now when the first among them, Duryodhana, was born, he was the eldest. So at that time, inauspicious omens were heard everywhere. Jackals were howling, and dogs were barking, and overall the portents indicated that this child would be very inauspicious. Vidura saw this portents and told Dhritarashtra, "Abandon this child for the good of the world and for the good of your dynasty. please give up this child. Apart from this child, you will have 99 sons. And those 99 sons will do you good. Be satisfied with 99 sons. Just give up this one son. Otherwise, this one son will spoil all the other 99 and will spoil the whole dynasty. Dhritarashtra, unfortunately, was attached. It's peculiar how attachment works, that even when there is no connection at this stage, the child is not yet lived with him. The child has done nothing till now to have such a strong attachment to it. But Dhritarashtra, he felt, how can I give up my own son? So he neglected the good advice of his counselors and he said, no, I'll keep the child. And thus began a saga of, it was not a saga actually, it is a long, long story, but it is a tragedy. It ends in disaster. It was a tragedy of Dhritarashtra repeatedly choosing to act according to his attachments instead of acting according to his intelligence, instead of acting according to the guidance of his elders. And this was the cause of the fall. This was the greatest failing of Dhritarashtra, and ultimately it became the cause of his fall from grace and the destruction of the whole Kuru dynasty. How this happened, we will discuss in our next session. Thank you. Hare Krishna.